air pollution threatens brain health in my show blog at ecoshock.org. So when experts say get and use a HEPA air filter for your home or workspace, avoid outside smoke, and use an N95 mask if you can't, believe them. Please protect your brain from wildfire smoke. You may think better and longer.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Smoke in the brain.
Let's take the case of wildfire smoke and dementia. One can lead to the other, apparently. In fact, Dr. Joan Casey found breathing wildfire smoke increases risk of dementia by 18%. Joan Casey is an environmental epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of Washington. Here are key selections on brain health and fire smoke from our interview, first broadcast in December 11th, 2024.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Nobody likes breathing wildfire smoke, and you don't need to be near the woods. Now, with extreme conditions during climate change, smoke travels around the Northern Hemisphere, and lots in Australia, too. New research shows repeated exposure to wildfire smoke increases the odds of a dementia diagnosis by 18%. It is many times worse than smog particles from cars and industry. Protect your brain. Let's find out more from a co-author of a new study, Wildfire Smoke Exposure and Incident Dementia in Southern California, 2008 to 2019. Dr. Joan Casey is an environmental epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of Washington. From the West Coast, Joan Casey, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me.
According to CAL FIRE, the 2024 wildfires in California burned more acres than in the previous 2 years combined, a terrible year. So Californians are getting smacked hard with smoke. But how can breathing wildfire smoke lead to dementia?
Gases and also particles, and the most important, PM2.5. And when those get deep into the lungs, they can actually pass into the bloodstream, and then throughout the body they cause problems like inflammation, oxidative stress. They can damage your DNA. And downstream, that can lead to health problems, including eventually dementia.
And what is dementia, just in case somebody missed it?
Sure. So dementia is this umbrella term for a set of neurological conditions. So people are probably familiar with things like Alzheimer's disease, and that's one type of dementia. There are other types, things like frontotemporal dementia or vascular dementia. And each of these kinds of dementia, the thing that kind of links them together is they result in loss of cognitive function and people having trouble living their daily lives. And the thing that I think about that's such a big problem with these conditions is, one, they're extremely disruptive and really reduce quality of life. And two, we don't have great treatments for dementia. And so working hard to understand risk factors and what we can do to prevent dementia from occurring in the first place is really important.
Well, maybe increasing dementia is from smoking tobacco or even repeated COVID infections. How can public health specialists be sure wildfire smoke is involved in a brain condition that shows up years later?
We can't be sure. This is kind of the first major study, but we are looking at 1.2 million people age 60 and older. And because wildfire smoke is a little bit different from some other exposures, it's kind of random the way it occurs. People aren't really selecting where they live based on wildfire smoke, and it's hard to predict where wildfire smoke will hit next. And so it's completely true that many factors lead to people developing dementia, including genetic risk factors. But given the size of this study and the strength of the relationships we're seeing here and the biologic plausibility, I think, you know, we may be on to an important risk factor for dementia.
And the numbers don't lie. I mean, you've ran through a bunch of things and here came up with some results that seem to show a connection, don't they?
That's what we think, and we are controlling for some of those other factors that might put people at elevated risk of dementia, their backgrounds, the type of neighborhood they live in. And we're really trying to isolate the impact of their long-term exposure to wildfire smoke. But of course, as always, it won't be a perfect study. But what we do see here is over a three-year period, because we're interested in looking at kind of this cumulative, repetitive exposure to wildfire smoke that more and more people are now experiencing, that over a three-year period, a 1 microgram per meter cubed increase in average wildfire PM2.5 exposure resulted in an 18% increase in the odds of developing dementia, which is a fairly substantial increase in odds. And when we compare that to what we see for PM2.5 from other sources, things like industrial activity or traffic, we only see a 1% increase in the odds of developing dementia. So we do see, one, an overall relationship for both types of fine particulate matter, but two, a much stronger relationship with wildfire PM2.5.
As with vehicle exhaust, the health threat comes from tiny particles we cannot see. They are about 30 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Why are these invisible aerosols so dangerous for humans?
We're learning more and more about that as time goes on. It's interesting because every year that passes, I think we see more disease conditions linked to the quality of our air, and we're increasingly realizing how critical it is in the way that we've done a really good job of cleaning up drinking water in the U.S. by and large. We're now more and more realizing the air that we breathe, because we breathe all day long, every day, while we're awake and asleep, is super important. And so when you're inhaling these particles, they're causing all sorts of downstream effects in the body that can lead to health problems. And the thing that's unique or interesting about wildfire PM2.5 is it has a higher proportion of it is made up of ultrafine particles, which are 25 times smaller than PM2.5 itself. And so those teeny tiny particles can actually move directly from the nose into the brain, potentially damaging cells there that could lead to dementia or other neurological conditions.
Yeah, when I lived in Los Angeles in the early 1970s, the famous hills often disappeared behind a brown smog, and then came clean air regulations and cleaner air. Is it fair to say now wildfire smog has become the bigger threat in California, even for city dwellers?
Oh, absolutely. On days where it's polluted in California, on average, about 70% of that pollution is from wildfire smoke. So on days where it's really bad out, it's usually wildfire smoke that's the culprit. And we've seen on the west coast of the United States, after the Clean Air Act passed in 1970, we had huge improvements in air quality. And year after year, we would see improvements. And in the last decade or so, those trends have fully reversed in the western U.S., where air quality is actually getting worse now on average for PM2.5. And that's fully driven by increases in wildfire smoke exposure.
Joan Casey, what is in wildfire smoke that makes it so toxic to us?
Wildfire smoke is this heterogeneous substance, so it has gases and particles. In our study, we're focusing in on those PM2.5 particles, but other things are in there. So we have volatile organic compounds, VOCs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs. We also have nitrogen oxides, which we know in the presence of sunlight react and create ozone, which is also helpful. I suspect that a bit of what we're picking up on here in our overall relationship with wildfire PM2.5 is driven by the other components of wildfire smoke that co-occur.
Well, we do have protective filters built into our bodies called the blood-brain barrier. Can these PM2.5 particles from fire smoke get past that directly into our brains?
We think not. We think the blood-brain barrier does a pretty good job with that. But these ultrafine particles may be able to slip through and cause direct damage to brain cells. And so it's kind of a subpart of PM2.5, the even tinier particles that are within that may be an additional problem. But the other thing I would say is we don't actually know that it's the particles directly impacting the brain itself that's the problem. We know that for many types of dementia, cardiovascular diseases are precursors to dementia development. And so it might actually be a different pathway through worsening cardiovascular disease in people tied to wildfire smoke exposure that down the road increases their risk of developing dementia. So my guess is it's several pathways, as it is usually the answer, that are at play here.
Your study looked at smoke and dementia. What about other neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's?
You're asking the question that the first author on this study, Dr. Holly Elser, who is a neurologist, has been poking at me. She is super interested in looking at that question because that is her hypothesis. We probably would see a similar relationship with other neurological conditions. We didn't look at that here, and to my knowledge, no one has looked at other conditions like Parkinson's in relationship to long-term wildfire smoke exposure. But it's likely some of these pathways are similar, and so definitely would be a good next step.
Well, suppose I'm vacationing at Disneyland in Southern California, and with bad luck, that week is filled with heavy wildfire smoke. Is a single exposure enough to make dementia more likely later on in life? Do we know the minimum dose for a wild smoke to trigger brain damage?
Short answer is we definitely don't know the answer to that question yet. The other thing I'd bring up is in our study, we're only looking at older adults. So we're looking at people 60 and older. So whether or not these findings translate to an earlier period in the life course, I think is an open question. What I can say is in this study, we looked at this 3-year average exposure to a main exposure of interest. So living your life for 3 full years, what's the average amount of wildfire PM2.5 you're experiencing? But we also looked at some other metrics because you're spot on. The way people are exposed to wildfire smoke is not really over this 3-year period. The dosing comes usually in bursts where there'll be a few days or a week with really high levels of wildfire PM2.5. And so we did in this work also try to use some metrics that captured those peak exposures. So we looked at the relationship between smoke waves and people developing dementia, smoke waves being 2 or more days where wildfire PM2.5 exceeded 15 micrograms per meter cubed, so quite high levels. And we also looked at the peak exposure during the worst week during that 3-year period. With those metrics, we did see, again, increases in the odds of developing dementia. And when we looked overall at kind of the total number of days where there was any wildfire smoke, so kind of capturing low-level exposure, we didn't really see a relationship there. So this kind of indicates that it might be those peak exposures that matter a lot. But back to your Disneyland trip, I would say it's a balance because the causes of dementia are multi-pronged, and things like spending time with family, social interaction is very important for preventing dementia. So it's always a balance. It's not an obvious answer. I would certainly say if you have a KN95 or N95, the face masks that folks were wearing during the height of the COVID pandemic laying around, I would recommend wearing one of those on your Disneyland trip. That would help. That can really filter out a lot of those particles that you'd otherwise be breathing in.
And this study determines that dementia from wildfire smoke increases for people over 75 years of age. Should the elderly mask up more or take protective cover, or does that matter if it takes decades of exposure to add dementia risk?
I think anyone 60 and older should take days that are smoky seriously from this study. And what I would say is folks can check the air quality index where they're living and try to understand if it's a bad air quality day. In the way that we now wake up and we check the weather on our smartphone, it'd be great if we got used to waking up and looking at the air quality outside and making some decisions based on that. You know, I need a raincoat and maybe I need a face mask. That's what I would recommend. If you're using the air quality index, the magic number is 101, where you might want to make some behavior changes. And what that looks like is staying indoors, closing the windows. If you have an air filter, running that air filtration system. If you do need to go outside, reducing activity, you don't want to do strenuous exercise. And then also wearing a mask. And that would be either a KN95 or a well-fit N95 mask that can prevent a lot of those particles from getting into your lungs.
Getting back to the new research on wildfire smoke, did you find a difference between gender or race and dementia risk after wildfire exposure?
We did, in this study, find differences by gender and by individual level race and ethnicity. And so overall, we saw for that 1 microgram per meter cubed increase in 3-year average wildfire PM2.5 exposure, this 18% increase in the odds of developing dementia. For some racially minoritized groups, including Asian and Black Kaiser Permanente members, we saw about a 50% increase in the odds of developing dementia for the same level of exposure. We also saw people living in communities with higher levels of poverty were additionally at risk of developing dementia compared to the overall population. And then we also saw stronger effects in people identifying as men compared to women in this study. So for the kind of disadvantaged populations here, we think it's probably due to inability to change behaviors in the face of wildfire smoke exposure. So maybe these folks are less able to stay indoors with the windows closed, less able to afford HEPA air filtration, or may have additional underlying health conditions that already put them at greater risk. The comparison of men to women was interesting to us. And then I was talking to a sociologist at the University of Washington, and she was like, of course, that's what you saw. Because she is out in the field talking to people in communities exposed to smoke, and she said, a lot of the men just don't change their behavior. They just go about their day, whereas the women seem more concerned about this environmental insult. And we've seen that with other environmental exposures, that women are maybe more attuned to them and more willing to change behaviors in the face of environmental threats. So that may be what's going on here, that men aren't taking as many health protective behaviors in the face of wildfire smoke exposure.
Well, you've mentioned staying indoors and running HEPA filters and wearing a mask outside, a good N95 mask. Do you have any other tips for how listeners can protect their brains when wildfire smoke is around?
In the short term, I think those are the main things that we can do. In the midterm, I think trying to talk to policymakers and get better forest management practices in place. We know that kind of a combination of tree thinning and prescribed burning can result in lower levels of wildfire exposure over the course of a year and protect health. In the longer term, we need much stronger climate policy because, as we know, the main driver of increases in wildfire smoke exposure is climate change.
From the University of Washington, we've been speaking with epidemiologist Dr. Joan Casey. You can find links to learn more in my show blog at ecoshock.org. I always add some useful notes and links there. Joan, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Listen to or download the original 29-minute interview with Joan Casey with links in my show blog at ecoshock.org.
9 reasons why listeners in America, Europe, or Russia should care as the boreal burns.
In the USA and Canada, in Europe, Russia, Australia, wherever you are, you need to pay attention to fires in the great boreal forests that ring the north of this planet. This is the other Amazon, the other big hinge in the carbon system, and your future. The media never pulls this together. Here are 9 very serious reasons why you need to care about the boreal forests.
Number 1.
As we heard, wildfire smoke invades parts of the continent with serious health impacts, deadly for some. Microscopic smoke particles, or PM2.5 and smaller, from wildfires is 3 to 10 times more toxic per unit than PM2.5 from common urban sources like air pollution from your tailpipe. Wildfire smoke intensifies risks for asthma, lung function decline, and cardiovascular events, especially in children, the elderly, and people with pre-existing health conditions.
Number 2. Smoke and cloud.
Smoke from wildfire also influences cloud formation across the continents. Recent satellite missions, for example, the EarthCare 2025, have visually tracked massive smoke plumes from Canadian wildfires reaching high altitudes up to 17 kilometers or 10 miles high. The smoke mingles with atmospheric moisture, enabling the formation of cirrus ice clouds and influencing lower-level water clouds thousands of kilometers from the source. At the same time, though, wildfire smoke may be helping to hide the true levels of warming. We discovered that with EcoShock guest Edward Blanchard Wrigglesworth. He was part of a NASA science team monitoring polar ice. Edward and I started with a concrete case. In June 2023, skies over New York City turned orange during the day. According to a peer-reviewed publication from Rutgers, smoke from mass wildfires in Canada cooled New York by 3 degrees C over 5 Fahrenheit. That is a good example of the cooling in this new study, though it is temporary. The paper title says a lot. It is, "Increasing Boreal Fires Reduce Future Global Warming and Sea Ice Loss." The abstract says, "We find that increasing boreal emissions reduce global warming by 12% and Arctic warming by 38%, reducing the loss of sea ice. Tropical precipitation shifts southward as a result of the hemispheric difference in boreal aerosol forcing and subsequent temperature response," end quote. The clouds formed with tiny particles and wildfire smoke may reflect more sunlight, cooling while they last, and may suppress rainfall.
Number 3. Change in albedo.
There may be a change in reflectivity of deforested ground, either positive or negative. In fact, there are both, but overall the wildfire change in reflectivity is judged to be small by scientist Rahel Vaizi. So there may not be a great change in albedo because of them. We don't know yet.
Number 4.
People and animals live in these forests and their lives and livelihoods have been affected. First Nations people in Canada's northern prairies were evacuated, some at the last minute by military cargo planes. All hotel rooms in Winnipeg were quickly filled, leaving others in arena-type beds or traveling to another province if they could afford it. Some evacuees are frightened and worried. Being chased out of your home by roaring fire is traumatic. Countless animals die in fires while others starve afterward.
Alex is covering 9 big reasons why you need to care about the boreal forest as much as the Amazon for the future of the world climate. Number 5.
Massive amounts of new carbon is emitted into the air, making burning boreal emissions equal to adding another large industrial country for pollution. In 2023, Canadian wildfires were the 4th largest greenhouse gas source in the world. Think about that. In a paper called Carbon Emissions from the 2023 Canadian Wildfires, Brendan Byrne and his colleagues said, quote, "We find that the magnitude of the carbon emissions is 647 gigatons, comparable to the annual fossil fuel emissions of large nations, with only India, China, and the USA releasing more carbon per year," end quote. That was published in Nature, August 2024. It's free, open access, look it up. Links in my blog.
Number 6.
Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas, considered a driver in almost a third of warming since pre-industrial time. More methane is released by fire processes. Permafrost is exposed and then releases CO2 and methane for years, even decades after the fire. Boreal forest fires emit substantial amounts of methane themselves directly into the atmosphere, primarily through smoldering combustion of organic matter. This is especially true in systems rich in peat or organic soils, where smoldering releases more methane compared to the flaming combustion. Large, intense fires like those in recent years lead to notable spikes in atmospheric methane during the fire event itself and afterward. Again, methane release does not end when the flames are extinguished, but may continue for years after severe fires.
Number 7.
Wildfire smoke may reduce crop productivity thousands of miles away, where the smoke is transported. However, the science about that is scarce and not clear. More to come on that.
Number 8.
None of this includes impacts from wildfires in the boreal forest in Scandinavia and Russia. The impacts there are likely similar. Are there differences? It's hard to find out the true facts from Russia.
And finally, number 9, wildfire comes on top of heavy logging of the boreal.
Major loss of forest due to fires comes on top of industrial clear-cutting of boreal forests by multinational corporations for things like tissue and toilet paper. As I said, reliable figures for the area burned by fire and logged each year in Russia are not available, but both are large, with all the problems that we talked about above. However, the area in Canada burned by wildfires in 2023 was roughly 20 to 26 times greater than the typical area of forest harvested each year, about 700,000 hectares annually. The 2023 total area burned was between 15 and 18.5 million hectares, more than double the previous record, and many times the historical average, and many times the amount logged. The 2025 wildfire season in Canada has been another severe one, with a cumulative area of approximately 6.5 million hectares burned as of August. It is becoming another in a series of worst fire years on record. Again, less than a million hectares was logged this year so far, according to the industry. Let's say it's 700,000 hectares. That's equivalent to 7,000 square kilometers, or about 2,700 square miles. A forest area more than half the size of England is removed from the Canadian boreal forest by logging every year. There will be multiple consequences for doing that, some feeding into planetary changes. So the Amazon and the Great Boreal Forest both help regulate the climate of the world. Both are being eaten away by combined logging and fire. Already, both great forests are changing from carbon sinks that capture our pollution to carbon sources adding to climate change. These forests have limits, they have tipping points, and beyond that, they don't recover, they don't come back. We don't know where those tipping points are, and we cannot afford to find out the hard way. Our time is up for this week. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last spring, in a Nebraska prairie, workers carrying drip torches carefully burned a narrow strip of prairie grass. They were creating the perimeter for a prescribed burn, a planned fire that removes dry vegetation and reduces the risk of severe wildfire. But this was not your typical burn crew. The team was composed almost entirely of women.
In fire as a whole, we tend to see that women make up somewhere around 10% of the workforce. You know, many women who work in fire are the only women on their entire crew. There's a lot of siloing and isolation.
Lainia Quinn Davidson directs the Women in Fire Training Exchange Program. It runs 2-week-long training events for women from various backgrounds, from professional firefighters to those who have never worked with fire. She says that as climate change increases the risk of devastating wildfires, there's a growing need for a wide range of people who understand and are trained in techniques like prescribed burning.
You want different kinds of people thinking about the problems, and you want different kinds of leadership. You want people to feel comfortable in the work so that they can operate at their best.
So she says the program is helping expand and strengthen that workforce. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.